Okay, I'm considered introduced, so I won't bother to introduce myself again. The title of the theme is Standing Strong as a Catholic in the Currents of the World. The currents, in my imagery, is a sort of a river that sweeps by. And as you realize, of course, I was invited to talk on this theme. Actually, I wasn't invited at all. Jean knows that I know about the rendezvous, so therefore she couldn't avoid inviting me, because they'd have to avoid inviting me around Christmas, and I would find out that they really had one, and I know what Christmas is.
Not going to be one in the fall.
But I know, but I figured it easier to have me. Anyway, briefly, what it comes down to is this, and I think most of my talk is very simple, and the first part of it is guaranteed to offend no one. It's the second part in which I will collectively insult you and individually apologize to you later if you follow my actions through. Otherwise, it will not. All right. Briefly, what means standing strong as a Catholic? Means to behave the way a Catholic behaves. But also, because there's a concept of standing against the current, it means doing only what Catholics can do as Catholics and what other people oppose you doing as Catholics. And essentially, because of the nature of the world, since the fall, these two things are the same. So let me eliminate some of the things that many of you may already think are Catholic things to do, which are not. One are pro-life activities. Well, the concept of pro-life activities, of course, is to oppose abortion. But it is not really a Catholic activity. Why? Number one, Protestants do it. Number two, it causes Catholics to betray their faith. I'm on the mailing list of an organization called Catholics United for Life. I'm sure many of you are also there down in Kentucky. As a matter of fact, I had some people speak at a group like this, and recently I got an envelope from them, and on the front it said a special merit message from Terry Randall, or Randall Terry. I always get his name wrong. And I thought about it. What have you done? You have put on the outside of a Catholic organization's envelope with the idea of soliciting interest and money a blasphemer's name. A man whom, I was told recently, was baptized as a Catholic and now teaches that the Blessed Mother's body is moldering in the grave, that she was sinful, she was not assumed into heaven, Jesus was not physically present on the altar, and that men are not forgiven their sins when a priest says so in confession. That is blasphemy. Why not put on there a special medus from Judas the betrayer? No. But that is a Catholic organization which now puts on the outside of their envelope with the intention of soliciting funds the name of an enemy of Jesus. And we say, well, pro-life activities bring about Catholicism. Okay. I point out also, there's a lady here who informed me of a situation in New Jersey where a pro-life organization in their ecumenical organizations, their ecumenical meetings, has specifically asked the Catholics not to pray the rosary. Come to our meetings, give us your support, lay your bodies on the line, get arrested, follow our Protestant leadership, but don't honor the Mother of God. It bothers us.
It's always something. Is this
and of course, Catholic...
Is Bishop Horn Protestant?
Thank you very much. I will talk to you later about Bishop Horn if you wish, okay? Now, the public, okay, the public also does not see pro-life activities as Catholic only. The pro-aborts do, but the public does not. All right. The public sees it as fundamentalist. The little press that the pro-life activities get on the news, you see sometimes people praying the rosaries, but almost all the spokesmen are Protestant fundamentalist ministers. In warfare, each side wears a different uniform so that everybody can tell exactly who's on whose side. The war in this world is Catholic against non-Catholic, and pro-life doesn't make that distinguish. All right, what about going to Mass? Does that help? No, not really. I mean, it helps. It's absolutely necessary, but it doesn't identify you as a Catholic. I tell the story of Flo Graff. Flo Graff is a woman in my area who wrote an anti-Catholic letter to the local newspaper, and a friend of mine called me up and sicked me on her. I said, go attack this woman. So I called her up and said, hi, I didn't see it, but a friend told me of your anti-Catholic letter. I'd love to talk to anti-Catholics. She said, I want you to understand I am a Catholic. And I said, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that. So I said, let me find out something. I said, do you believe the Pope is ever infallible? No. Do you believe the Blessed Mother was assumed? No. Do you believe she was sinless? No. Do you believe she was a virgin? No. Do you believe that Jesus becomes physically present on the altar? No, I don't believe those things. I said, well, good. Now we just qualified you're not a Catholic. And she says, what do you mean? If I don't believe exactly the way you do, I'm not a Catholic. I said, if you don't believe exactly the way I do, you don't go to heaven, and you're not a Catholic. I said, now let's talk about the letter. I attended a spirituality conference held at Mount St. Michael High School in Bronx in the Archdiocese of New York. There must have been, 2,000 people there. And
I went out, a random survey, with asked 15 people if the Pope was ever infallible. One said yes, the other 14 said never. Yet they attended spirituality conferences. I attended, defended the Catholic view of homosexuality in a high school with a nationally known Catholic priest. I will not mention his name out of charity. But if I asked you to name five people who would never betray the faith, he would be in the five top five. And he said, in very subtle fashion, that everybody's a homosexual, to one degree or another, and that the church's teachings may not change on homosexuality. Oh yes, but if you ever had a chance to listen to this man speak, if you ever heard of him, if you ever wanted to attend one of his masses, you would say, here goes a living saint. Here's one of our great, great Catholics. Yes, so does going to Mass make you a Catholic? No. Apparently saying Mass doesn't even make you a Catholic. How about confession? Oh, confession's definitely a Catholic activity. But it's not standing fast against the world. The river that sweeps by, that washes away the weak people, and changes the world into the moral cesspool that it is, stops at the doors of the confessional. Not public, it's private. So that's not the thing you do to be a Catholic standing strong against the current. What about saying the rosary? Yeah, saying the rosary is good. I do it myself. I advocate it. But again, it's primarily private. And these days, even the few public places we do it, the Protestants object and we back off. All right? And if I am to believe people who told me about pro-life activities, apparently Protestants say it too, out of a matter of courtesy. Okay? So that's not it either. What about the secular humanist good life? You know, giving money to the Cancer Society. What about, being faithful to your wife, being charitable and honest in your business dealings? What about keeping the commandments? Well, Protestants do that, some of them. Jews do that, some of them. Muslims do that, some of them. Pagans do that, some of them. Atheists do it. So that isn't what distinguishes a Catholic. No, what distinguishes a Catholic is that which is not non-Catholic. I'll say it again, it's a double negative, but it's the only way to define it. Whatever you do which is not non-Catholic is Catholic. Now, what is non-Catholic? That's any belief, activity, organization, person which can properly be described as non-Catholic in an area or category in which Catholicism has any meaning or any value. Okay. Therefore, non-Catholic is people and actions which do something which are not in accord with our system of belief. Proper Catholic action opposes and destroys that which is non-Catholic. How do we do this? Well, first, how we don't do it. We don't do it by protest, by letters to the editors. These only object to the existence of evil. We don't sign petitions for Latin masses and think that we've now brought about something more Catholic. No, what we've done is transfer ink from a pen to ink on a paper in a certain pattern. Oh, it's a good thing, but it doesn't really make you stand strong as a Catholic, because all this does is register somewhere a protest against something you don't like, which also may be wrong. It's not even like voting, where at least your vote counts on who gets into the office. This is contraceptive Catholic behavior. We want the fun of opposing the evil, but we don't want the effort of destroying and dismantling the evil. We want to go down on record. We don't want to go and actually do the labor. It's the real contraceptive mentality which unfortunately has permeated our society into an unfortunate effect, permeated our philosophy and our church and our theology. Catholics oppose and destroy. They take the responsibility for their actions. They seek and destroy. Protestants protest. Words don't win anything but applause. Actions change the world. Now, what about the concept of defending the faith? Well, I defend the faith often. I mean, this is what people would say. Is this not a Catholic thing? Is it Catholic enough? No. Because when one successfully defends anything, whether it be a battlefield, a city, a position on a football field, if you successfully defend it, at the end of your successful defense, nothing has changed. And Catholics should be destroying the world, changing it, remaking it. We are here to extend the kingdom, not simply to hang on to what we got. The Vietnam War was lost by the United States in a large sense because strategically it was defensive. Yes, every time except the last, when the North Vietnamese invaded, they were beaten off. Every single time. But the United States never attempted to destroy the war-making capacities of the North Vietnamese. They never went strategically offensive. When you defend, all you have to do is lose one. To defend also, you must wait for the other to attack. And what happens until they do?
while we sit around and fall prey to the sin of sloth, which is still a deadly sin. Standing fast does not mean standing still. Now, how does one destroy? Our answer comes from Jesus. Do what he did. Call others to repentance, reform, and conversion. That is to say, evangelize. Make the world Catholic over now, starting from this point, one person at a time. Make it from non-Catholic to Catholic. The accepted invitation, and that's what we're doing, is offering an accepted invitation, changes a person's status always, by definition. There are other ways to force a person to become a Catholic, but they are generally morally unacceptable, the old conversion by the sword. By definition, evangelism is the attempt to change the status of a person, from outsider to adopted son, from alien to friend. This is what standing fast means in a Catholic world. It is the ultimate anti-contraceptive act, the ultimate litmus test of identity in zoology and biology is reproduction. Does a thing reproduce according to its kind? The definition of a species is it can mate with someone else in its species and reproduce the same species. Catholics standing fast against the world perform the ultimate Catholic behavior, the ultimate Catholic act of reproduction. They produce by conversion or by birth. And birth involves conversion also. Because even when you're baptized, you're still not born a Catholic when you come out of the womb. You still have to be made a Catholic. That is the ultimate Catholic behavior, to reproduce one by one according to our own kind. It is what God said in Genesis, reproduce each unto his own kind. So there you are. That's what standing fast means in today's world. Evangelize or give up your Catholic card. And that is the end of part one, and none of you should have been offended. Now, the offensive part. Part two.
Don't use my name, Benny.
And as I said before, I will insult you collectively. I will apologize individually to you later. I will apologize, and I will briefly explain to you why. I was in a high school not so long ago in a mock Senate in the high school giving evidence to the mock Senate on why Roe versus Wade should be overturned by a constitutional amendment. After the talk, one of the girls came over who was, quote, when we first started the conversation, pro-choice. By the end of the conversation, she was willing to tie down women and force them to have children under certain conditions, whether they wanted an abortion or not. But she still was pro-choice in some circumstances. And I repeatedly accused her of dishonesty because she would not answer my questions, because she evaded the issues, because she asked me questions back. She did all the tricks that dishonest people do. Now, what I said to her was, I accuse you of dishonesty, but I will withdraw it if you promise, and I gave her my card, to call me at another date and see the eclipse of reason. She said, fine. Or the silent scream, I forget which movie. She never called me. So what I did was, I took that principle. I will insult you today, intentionally. Understand, you're supposed to be offended, and later, if you wish, put me on trial. I will take the accusations back from you individually when I talk to you on the phone, when you get in touch with me and say, Vin, your talk got to me. What do I do? Otherwise, the accusation stays. Now the offensive part. If I simply ended here, then I would be like most, if not all, of the other speakers of things like this. I say something, you nod. I finish, you applaud. I gather my papers, you go have another beer and gossip. Okay, but not this time. You have to evangelize or you go to hell. That simple. Jesus told us, and he meant it, that only those who do the will of his Father in heaven go to heaven, not those who cry, Lord, Lord. Yeah, everybody cries, Lord, Lord. Everybody says, yeah, you're in charge. Oh, Jesus, come into my heart. But the will of God is conversion. Do it, go to heaven. Don't, go to hell. Don't say nobody ever told you. You've been told. Now, let me make it personal, if I haven't made it personal yet. Not to you yet, but for me. In me, you have the evangelical means to accomplish that goal. You can no longer say you have any excuse whatsoever. You have none. You can't say, I don't know where to turn. I don't know who to learn from. I don't know how to start. I don't know what to do. You're looking at and you're listening to the answer to all of those questions. It is personalized in the person who's talking to you now. And you are lucky enough to live where you can get in touch with me. And when you evangelize, you meet the evangelist, you can meet this evangelistic obligation in one of two ways. You can use me or you can let me use you. But you must do one or the other, or both even.
You cannot be indifferent anymore. You can become my student, or you can become my servant. That's your choice. The world is evil. You must attempt to change it. No options here. It is a Christian vacuum. Some of you come here to things like this frequently, and you probably network and belong to other ones, to flee from the world for a short time. You come here because you think these are Catholic activities. You come here because when you return, you can say, I did something Catholic. I attended something Catholic. I'm a better person. But you don't evangelize. What you become is the Catholic equivalent of female impersonators. You look nice on the outside, but where it really matters, you don't have what counts. Let me get more personal this time with you. Most of you have known me for years. Some of you just met me. Very few have done anything to learn from me or to support me, and that's disgraceful. You're not willing to learn, you're not willing to teach, you're not willing to go to heaven. And you can't go to heaven unless you're willing. Use your obligation. I'm your teacher. I'm the expert. I'm the best in the field. Quit complaining you don't know what to do. Quit saying nobody told you. I'm available. I have a phone. No, but you'd rather go have another cup of coffee, read The Wanderer, and talk about how short the confession lines are. Okay, that's really Catholic, okay? I'd rather go do something else. But I don't want to deal with my neighbor, I don't want to deal with my friend, and God forbid I should support Vinnie Lewis who's doing it. Who's desperately broke because of the malicious maladjustment management done by the two supporters of mine, who took the money and run. Whose help I need from every single person in this room. How many of you personally have ever attempted to bring anyone into the church? Okay, maybe some of you have. How many of you have attempted to do it this year? How many this month? How many this week? Now, again, I'm the greatest advocate of lukewarm Catholicism in the world. If you do something right, God bless you. But what do you think it is? A part-time thing? Is it part-time
right? I'm tired this morning.
How many of you have an obligation, or how many of you have realized your obligation to do this? Not optional. How many of you have realized your obligation to support people who do it? And how many of you feel bothered even to find out that I'm the only one who's doing it the right way in this country today? No. How many of you have actually what it takes? How many of you have read my stuff? No. Just reject him straight out of hand. Why? Because he challenges me. Because he asks me to do something because I don't like his personality. No, let me make a rash judgment and say to hell with him. He's a nut. He's crazy. Fine. No problem. I thank God for the company I'm in because they said the same thing about Jesus. And am I making a comparison? Of course. Do you have relatives and friends who have left the church? I'm sure you have. Have you called me in? No. Why not? I'm the expert on this, people. Understand. Get off the hook. At the judgment seat, you're going to stand in front of the judgment of Jesus, and he's going to say, listen, your nephew doesn't go to church anymore. What did you do about it? You're going to say, well, Lord, you know, it was his business. What I would like to do is to point to someone else like me and say, I gave Vinnie Lewis a telephone call, and it was his responsibility. I'm off the hook. I can't take anybody off the hook. I'm off the hook. I mean, I can take you off the hook, but I can't take me off the hook. This is my calling. But all of you can get off the hook. There's a concept in Hinduism where the samsari, the holy man, the real holy man, will take the karma, the sins of all his followers, so that they can reach nirvana quicker. I'm sort of doing that. If you don't take advantage of it, you're fools. You're resisting the grace of God. Why? Well, some of you, again, you probably have problems with me. I've heard that one. And some of you don't fully agree with me. And some of you can't quite see it my way, which is exactly why I suppose you put me on trial. Under oath. Let's examine those things. Let's quit talking in the back rooms about where I'm wrong on this or I'm too strong or too harsh. Why don't you confront me in a trial under oath? Under oath. Let's swear on a Bible. And then see how many of you really disagree with me. Or how many of you are just too damn lazy to do anything about it. And you don't like the fact that I pricked your consciences. Isn't that really what it is? Let's put me on trial. You testify me against me. And let me cross-examine you under oath. And let's see that's what it is. All right, let's do it. But if you don't want to do it, quit talking. Quit harping behind my back. There's two comments I make at this point. Number one, you're wrong and I'm right, those of you who disagree with me. You're not allowed to disagree with me any more than you're allowed to choose your position on abortion or contraception. I do not speak of my own authority, but even my most strongest enemy, whose name I will not give, but you would all know it, who called me up the other day and said, how dare you say that I'm supporting you, in the conversation said, you are, your whole approach is backed by the magisterium of the church. Remember Jesus? He who hears you, hears me. That you, that personal pronoun refers to me. And if it doesn't refer to you, what makes you think you're going to go to heaven? And if it doesn't refer to you, why haven't you tapped into the grace of God to make it refer to you? And if you don't speak for him, what kind of Catholics are you? That's not an arrogant claim. That's not a boastful claim. That's a claim from a rather crummy sinner who simply realizes that he wants to go to heaven and there's a very slight chance of it, as there is a very slight chance for anybody here to go to heaven. The great saints have always taught that it is a very small percentage of people to go to heaven. Let's stop being universalist and predestinationist, and let's stop realizing that, let's start realizing that our chances of going to heaven are very slight. It's a daily struggle, and the most Catholic thing we can do is evangelize. Number two, let's assume that someone, somewhere, actually honestly disagrees with me, sincerely. I haven't met that person yet. Let's assume he exists. Let's presume that this person believes that I am wrong in some area, if not most. Then why in the name of God haven't you gotten in touch with me and tried to correct me? Doesn't my soul, my salvation, my sinning mean anything? Oh no. Jesus tells us to correct one another's, but no, you're letting me go away. There are people who think I'm right, and I think I'm right. And if I'm doing wrong, and you people let me go that way, tell me, what are you going to say at the judgment seat? Yes, I knew he was wrong, Lord. Yes, I know I have to judge each individual as if he is Jesus. And yes, I know that applies to Vinnie Lewis. But just like the Methodist said to me once when I asked him to preach the gospel, and I said, don't you have an obligation to preach to every living creature? He said, yes, but not to you. Is that what you're going to say? I knew Vinnie was wrong. Sometimes he amused me, sometimes he annoyed me, but he was totally wrong. But yes, Lord, I let him go on his way. I am quoting 2 Ezekiel to you. The sin, the blood of my sin is on your soul, not mine. I'm off the hook. I'm functioning in good conscience. You, it says, son of man, if your friend sins, correct him. If he listens to you, fine. If he doesn't listen to you, it's on his soul. But if you don't go approach him and you don't correct him, the sin is on your soul. I have said this to people, and what they have found is their many, many objections evaporate, and they never have the time to deal with me. Aren't you bothered by the fact, if you disagree with me, that I'm sinning? Aren't you bothered by the fact that I'm presenting Catholicism in the wrong light? Aren't you bothered by the fact that I'm presenting an organization to people who follow me and believe me, and I'm leading them into heresy? If that doesn't bother you, what kind of Catholics are you? I don't know, but you sure don't do the type that are in heaven. When you decide to help me, and you better decide to help me, there's three things I need. One, money. My organization is broke and in debt. My guys who ran it refused to show me the checks, refused to show me the receipts. Make a long story short, they ran up big bills, didn't pay them. I still don't know what they are. At the same time, I had to borrow money from my parents just to run an ad to try to get out of debt. I need contributions. Quit saying nobody's preaching the old Catholicism, nobody's doing the fire and brimstone, nobody's talking for the pulpits, if I can only find a good priest and stuff like that. Well, let me tell you something. God doesn't waste good priests on people who don't bother to serve him. Serve him first, and that means serve him through me. Then see if your priest doesn't improve. I personally claim almost 95% of the reform of my parish. Because when I reform my place, and it's on the tape I gave, when I reform myself, my church changed radically. Why? Because God doesn't waste good priests on crummy Catholics. There aren't enough to go around. If you're a crummy Catholic, don't look at your priest, look at yourself. Number two, I need hands. I mean hands. I mean physical hands. I've got about 1,400 publications to get out in 1 month. Just folding and mailing them is an immensely difficult thing. I need subcontractors, people who will agree to accept from me one copy of my publication. They will make 5 photocopies and mail it out to other people. You will be serving God that way. You will be evangelizing. My publication, if you haven't read it, I'll leave one copy around. It is not free. Read it and then subscribe to it. And if you subscribe to it, I got a special deal with a book called The Apostolic Digest, and I'll leave one copy around on that. I got them for sale, teaching to the church. Then you are evangelizing by your hands. Yes, not everybody speaks as well as I do. Not everybody's got as quick a mind as I do. Okay, use me. Use me in that way. If you want to receive alms from me, fine. If you want to instead sick me on your enemies, fine. But if you don't use me, and there isn't anybody else around doing what I'm doing,
then you're avoiding your responsibility for evangelism. Third thing I need, voices. I need you to be my voice when I'm not physically present. Why? I need you to learn from me how to speak like me, defend the church like me, and I need you to talk to people so that some people have done. When you get shocked, you say, I can't take John, but Vinnie Lewis can. Are you willing to talk to him? He'll prove to you that the Church of Rome is correct. Say that to Protestants. They like it better than Catholic Church. At that point, you've used your voice. You put him in touch with me. You've done something. And here's my absolute, complete, 100% guarantee. Tell them that if they can find anything wrong with the Church of Rome, I'll join their church. At that point, they usually, some will back off, some will not. But the point is, you push them into the corner of evangelization, because no Christian can say that he is not interested in conversion. That is why, unfortunately, so many of us qualify as excellent Catholics but not good Christians. That's his will. That's his way of telling his followers from his enemies. Did they bring others into his army? Did they bring others in to his church? Did they at least try? Now, in a sense, what you said before in the other talk, you cannot beat people over the head. That will not convert them. But you sure as hell can try to beat them over the head, because that may bring them a step closer. People do not respond just to seeing a better alternative. Because if that were true, everybody would be a Catholic. Well, of course, they don't see it that way. Well, their intellects are clouded by sin. But let us all point out that if there is a person here who is not the exact optimum weight and the exact optimum physical condition, it is because that person sees what is good but refuses to take the effort to do it. And that is every single one of us, I presume. We know we should be doing these things better, but we do not. We know we shouldn't be eating what we eat, but we do. We know we should be spending more time at work and more time reading and more time praying, but we don't. Why? Because the human nature since the fall, because of concupiscence, says, even when I see something good, I don't necessarily seek it. When you stand in front of the judgment seat and he separates the sheep from the goats, one of the other things he's going to say is, did you try to increase my reign on earth, my kingdom? Not hold on to what you got. Not make it better. Did you try to increase the numbers, because that's how kingdoms increase? Did you treat your fellow man as if they were Jesus? And if Jesus came to you as a Protestant or as a pagan, or as he once was, in a certain sense, a Jew, would you convert him? Or would you say, well, Jesus, I guess you know what you're doing better than I, and go your own way, and as long as you're happy in that thing. Did you correct one another? I don't think so. That's one of the things you're going to be asked. And that's what I do. I correct people. I confront people. I don't do it all the time, and I sure as hell don't do it enough. And sure as hell is exactly the point. If I don't do it enough, I will go to hell. But at times like this, I'm going to stand in front of the judgment seat, and so will we all, and I will point to everyone here and say, Lord, I tried with these people. Maybe I didn't do it enough, maybe I didn't do it often enough, and maybe I didn't follow up, but I tried once, and that's something. Again, if you don't want to do it yourself, let me do it for you. Put me in your place because of your support. That's it. That's my talk. That's the situation. But that's your choice. It's very simple. It comes down to two four-letter words that start with the letter H. You help or you hell. That's it. You go one place or the other. You go to help or you go to hell. That's your choice. Don't say nobody ever told you. Thank you. Ezekiel chapter 3. Start the chapter. Sorry. Starting page 18. Starting verse 17. Thus the Lord of the Word came to me. Son of man, interesting point. He's calling Ezekiel son of man, same as Jesus Christ himself. Son of man, I have appointed you a watchman for the house of Israel. When you hear a word from my mouth, you shall warn them for me. If you say to the wicked man, you shall surely die, and you do not warn him, or speak out to dissuade him from his wicked conduct so that he may live, that wicked man shall die for his sin, but I will hold you responsible for his death. If, on the other hand, you have warned the wicked man, yet he has not turned away from his evil, nor his wicked conduct, then he shall die for his sin, but you shall save his life.
So in both cases, he dies.
Oh, yeah, well, of course.
The impression we got was that in the case where you failed to speak out, you were the one who died, and it's off the hook, and I think that's
what happened. Absolutely. No, my case it is, because I am claiming
from classic traditional Catholic theology that I am functioning with a clear conscience. So therefore, if I do evil, I am not wicked. But the point also is this. If a man drinks poison by accident, he still dies. He does not commit the sin of suicide, but he still dies. If I am wrong, then I am doing evil. I may not be responsible for that, but if any of you see me doing wrong and do not dissuade me from that, you are responsible for my sin because I am functioning in a clear conscience. I have said it before, I'll say it again, and I suggest you put me under oath. What I do is the right thing, the right way. You people who oppose me are wrong. Now, if I am wrong, for God's sake, dissuade me of it. Even though I am functioning in a clear conscience and I am not attributing, adding up time in purgatory or putting myself closer to hell on account of this, you certainly are because you're seeing an evil and doing nothing about it. And now, just so there's no qualms, no possibilities of error whatsoever, I am imploring you to correct me. In the same sense that I would say, you know, again, one of these glasses is poison, one is a good glass of wine. I ask you to tell me which one, so I will not die from it, even though, again, I will not have the sin of suicide on my soul. I implore the help, and that's part of the help, is if I am wrong, for God's sake, correct me. I put this in almost every publication I write, and again, as I point out, I occasionally get a letter. Almost always they are loonies, absolute, complete loonies.
I wrote one of those letters.
And always they are loonies. Okay. Now, the only thing I would suggest in closing is, once again, I think, I hope, I have pricked you enough to incite you into some kind of activity, and I say again, rather than simply a series of questions and answers, put me on trial with a judge, put me on oath, and offer testimony against me, then let a judge or a jury convict me of either being right or wrong, proper or improper, valid or invalid, in my speech and my approach. But I can't force you to do it.
What we're going to do is take a few questions.
You got it.
Until noon, we can discuss this.
Both.
Then we can have a trial.
I know it takes
time. Vinny, I'm glad I evangelized you 5 years ago. Like a farmer. He didn't know where to turn. I showed him where to turn.
I mean, I know Jesus said
I never saw you guys turn into nothing.
Maybe I'm a little off the dark scale. What we're going to do right now is those of you who have some certain problems, as Vinny refers to them, with any of the remarks he made, we'll take some single questions right now. He's going to get yourself worked up, and he's going to go on trial later. All right? So this will be food for thought and a little bit of barbing back and forth.
You're not single anymore.
Go ahead.
I only have one question. Yeah. I might let some of us want to talk.
Absolutely. I will apologize individually later for $20 each. Go ahead.
Would you agree that this might be a valid point, that perhaps we think you're right, you know, not teaching error, but we don't think that you're the only one that's right or right for everyone?
No, it's not a valid point.
Are you bringing people into God's army?
No way of telling.
But what if we know other people that are?
No way of telling that either.
There's no way of telling
whether anybody is converted or not.
No, sure. When I was at the John the other day, instead of God's pitbull, maybe we should call you God's bottom killer. Tear everyone apart, and then people can go through your
feet. Very good. Here's my point. Number one, conversion is an internal thing. I say this many times, the only way to determine who a Catholic is to wait until he dies. On his deathbed, if he asks for a priest, he's a Catholic. I don't care if he hasn't gone to Mass for the last 15 years and he's been Jimmy Swaggart. If on his deathbed he has access to a priest and doesn't ask for one, he's not a Catholic. Now, therefore, he might have just been a very bad Catholic all of his life and has been a Methodist minister or an Episcopalian bishop for 75 years, but he always was a Catholic. By the same token, the guy who went to Mass and communion every day, he may never have been. Not only, but also the point is this. We fail to understand something else. Being a Catholic means absolutely nothing if you go to hell. I mean, I don't think you get a cooler place. I don't think you enjoy it anymore. I said this before with Paul Keating. When the world is over, at the judgment seat, let's count heads, and then let's see who we can take credit for. But in the meantime, as a prudent thing, let us look at Jesus. I see Jesus' conversion the same way I do it. Hey, drop everything, come right now, shut up, go, that's it.
I don't think Jesus ever said shut up.
Okay. He said amen, amen, which is a Hebraic expression.
That's
In the original Greek and Hebrew. But the point I'm making is, and I think you understand it, is Jesus' calls were complete, unconditional, and immediate. And when they said things like, well, you know, I really have problems with the second coming and the divorce concept, and you know, if you could just explain that, I think we come over to your theological system, Dr. Jesus. He said, quit playing stupid games with me. Alright? And what he said was, instead, take it or leave it. Walk away or not. Now, I do that. All right. Now, I don't do that always in the beginning of the conversation, but I try to do it before the end. And again, one of the things that bothers me tremendously is I point out that I now have about 23 debate tapes out. How many have you heard personally in which you found me harsh? None. So you don't know what you're talking about, do you?
Yes, I
think
I thought we were harsh.
Okay, how many of you heard in which I was fairly gentle? Did you hear Bob Jones? Did you hear Jimmy Swaggart?
I didn't hear any of that.
No. Did you hear Bob Jones and Jimmy Swaggart?
No.
Okay, see, there's the point, okay? Was I justified in the ones I was harsh with?
Yes.
Okay, but the point I'm making is that I have 23 debate tapes that I put out and a whole bunch of others that I set at home, which, because of various different qualities, aren't very good. I would say on about five I'm harsh. On a couple of cases, I call people liar and heretic.
Why are you defending yourself?
Big pardon?
Why are you defending yourself now?
I'm defending myself because I'm being attacked.
No, why are you trying to convince people that you're gentle if you really believe that
the
harshness is good?
No, because, like St. Paul says, all things for all people. Harshness is sometimes justified. I am not always harsh. So when people say to me, as I believe Jennifer was, why are you not sometimes gentle?
I didn't say gentle.
Okay, fine. Misunderstood you. Other than harsh. Then I say to them, have you heard me be other than harsh? And they say, no, never. And then I say, why are you criticizing me for something that you have never heard me do when I have done it? It's an unfair accusation. Okay? And then what I say is, you are going by reputation. The guy who canceled my debate at the University of Steubenville said, you sometimes call people liars. I said, you're absolutely correct. I sometimes call people liars. I said, how often? He says, well, on the tape I heard that you gave me. I said, how about the other one? He says, well, no, you were very kind and gentle on the other one. I said, so you chose one thing that you didn't like and used that as an excuse instead of looking through an entire thing. And then I asked him, the guy was the head of the anti-Catholic League, and he prayed, he wanted to prove whose God was right, his or mine, by praying for my death. And I would pray for his death. I didn't agree because I figured he'd go to hell and it was a sin. But I wanted to call him back a week later and said, I'm still alive, because he wanted to put a deadline of a week on it. Now, the point I'm trying to make is, people have seen me in action, and you are wrong if you haven't seen me in action, can testify to, and I go now, I've now spoke with 565 committed anti-Catholics. I've been harsh in about 80 cases. I have been firm but gentle and leading in all of the others. And almost all of them were in the beginning, and that was one of the reasons why I decided harshness was appropriate at times. Jesus wasn't always harsh, but he was always demanding. Yes.
In general, I say people, when they hear you, they're disturbed by something. The word is usually a personality problem. But I finally have one explicit thing in which I can point to right now. I reject your notion that the biblical word, who hears you, hears me, refers to you. I think you are arrogating to yourself a magisterial position which you know where you have.
Okay, can you speak the truths of the church, or are they hidden so they're not accessible to you?
Many are accessible.
Are all of them accessible?
What do you mean by accessible?
You can read them in a book, understand them, phrase them in English so other people can understand them also. Or are we Gnostic? Is there a hidden kernel of real truth that only the Pope and the Cardinals know? Or are the teachings of the Church presented in such a fashion that anyone with average intelligence can read them, and if he's got a good memory, remember them?
All right. Look, I could say, to the extent you faithfully mirror, they be they teaching,
yeah.
Okay.
But
then in that case, you are a spokesman for the Church.
Did I say anything else?
No, there are many other judges. You're identifying yourself as the soul, or at least the best preacher.
No.
It's certainly not their faith.
No. I'm sorry, I wasn't clear, or you misunderstood me. I am not talking about expounding truth of the church. I am talking about an evangelist who presents the truth of the church. I am not talking about being a moral theologian and arguing fine points at all. But what I am saying is, when I pronounce that the assumption took place, yes, I speak de fide, I speak infallibly, and I speak with the words and authority of Jesus. That's all.
Okay. I have no problem with that. But you are not restricting yourself to the recitation of de fide teaching.
Yes, I am.
You are arrogating to yourself an identity that this Benny is the one, not Bishop Sheen, not Bishop Vaughan, not Bill Maher, but you.
Okay. Did you hear me discount anyone else?
Well, yes. You seem to put yourself as the only show in town.
Seeing is the key point. You have a misunderstanding.
I think I'm
absolutely, and I'm correcting you now. If you remember what I said, one of the things I said was, be my servant, be my student. Do what I do in the same way I do it.
What?
Now, that is the exact opposite of saying only I alone can do these things.
What
I am asking for is imitators.
No, what God said is that you are the only one that is doing anything. And your quote is, I am the only one doing it right in this country.
Yes.
Now that's not
you come across as though you portray yourself as a supreme being, that you are God, you are without sin.
Not at all.
No question about that.
I had a question for you. Not at all. I commit many sins. Let me just make a comment if I may, okay? I make this statement on the fact that I am a professional in a very small field in which contacts are made and in which I know, I believe, of every other evangelical, Catholic, apologetic group in this country, because there aren't that many, and again, it's a small in cottage industry. And what I have found is every other single one, without exception, compromises doctrines of the faith or straight out denies them. I repeat that. Every other one, without exception, compromises doctrines of the faith or denies them. Now, therefore, what I'm saying is, yes, I'm the only one doing it right. Again, if I am wrong in this, please show me another group, because I continue to present myself as the only alternative. The reason I formed my organization is because of a need that no one else was filling. If I am wrong, please point out the other organization, and I will apologize publicly, privately, any way you want, that I made it factual.
You lived over the hill, down there.
I agree that in one place, at one time, presenting as much as you do, I've never heard someone present it with as much confidence and unembarrassed about it, period.
You never said in one place.
This is still a shy person,
Chuck. except, I haven't talked to many, but I have talked to a deacon the other night, and I was thrown out of an RKIA program because I mentioned original sin, and now we are, and he said, the church doesn't teach that. And I said, Newman said this, that you don't abrogate or minimize one part of the truth to promote another part of the truth. You tell it all. And I've never heard in one sermon, in one, by any bishop, and I haven't heard many, I don't. I haven't heard from anyone at one time in one place that somehow Christ is involved in the Orthodox, authentic, magisterial teaching as well as Vinny. And whatever the aura aside, I have not. And that's, and I've talked to priests. And
not much for criticism, not for praise.
I won't let anything stand.
As being the person, for the most part, I've listened to you, and I have no disagreements with much of what, I have disagreed with some of the things you said, but I'm letting myself off the hook here, because I see that you've been given great talent in the memories and whatnot, the ability to retrieve facts and quotes and whatnot, and to think logically.
And the talents that God has given you, and he wants to see a harvest, what I'm accusing you of is that you're not honing your skills in order to be more successful. We can look at the great athlete who can do everything, and yet he can't work into that team concept, and so he's always placed on a loser, even though he's the Wilt Chamberlain, he only made one championship type of a thing. What I'm saying to you is, yes, you have the skills, but you seem to reject the idea that you can hone your technique to become more successful. Instead of calling somebody a liar, you could say, you know, you're being dishonest with yourself. And instead of tuning out what you're saying, they wouldn't be insulted, and they'd say, well, being dishonest, when you say, you're a liar, right away, you're hitting their ego. But if you say, you're being dishonest with yourself, well, that doesn't hit your ego, and you're getting the same thing across. And I think a lot of times, you know, you're going to hell. You could say, well, you know, you are putting yourself in danger salvation, because you, of course, can't say they're going to hell. They haven't died yet. You just said you can never tell if someone's saved until that last minute, so you can't say they're damned until that last minute either. You're putting yourself in danger, possibly. What I'm saying is that, like any great athlete or debater or singer or whatever, if you have great talent, you also have to realize you have a responsibility to hone your techniques to be more successful. And personally, I don't have any problem with calling someone to the table if they're in error. But I think if you attack their ego, right away they turn off what you're saying.
I would suggest that I don't answer now because I think it's very good. But try out, what do you think?
Yeah,
and that'll let him think that I don't have an answer.
John plays his comments. If everybody understands that this is a pre-trial hearing, okay. See if there's enough evidence to put him on trial. All right.
Okay.
And so if you keep your point
in mind,
even like Dr. Mara,
I'm giving my name.
No deal.
Who's going to sit down?
No.
Who's the judge?
If you've made a comment,
and producing the execution.
And if you still have, after an initial contact, your idea against Vinny's, and you still have an argument against him, that's when you bring it up. It's in the trial. And this is a pretrial hearing to decide whether or not you want to pursue your argument against Vinny based on his response to your initial comment. You want to hit
me? No, I don't. I really think it's very good. All I can say is I disagree totally on
everything.
Sean. I truly understand. You said you want to see the ideas about you want to be our teacher or
yes.
A slave.
Yes.
The one problem I have with that is in Jean's opening talk, she used a quote from Charlie Rich that said there are as many ways to salvation as there are people. And just one equation I want to make, or I guess it would be a non-equation, is that you're saying, what I think you're saying is, Vinny's way equals Christ's way, and therefore Christ's way equals Vinny's way. That means if I'm going to do Christ's way, I have to do it Vinny's way. And I don't think that really works mathematically or whatever, logically, because with Charlie Rich's whole thing, you know, in mind, there are, yes, there will be similarities, we have to believe the same thing, but your way is not Christ's way exclusively. I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. You're doing it Christ's way. That's fine.
Beautiful accusation.
And also, one more thing is that, oh, yeah. Conversion. You said conversion is the only way. Conversion is the exclusively Catholic thing that is the salvation, I guess.
Evangelization
and conversion. But I'm sure you're aware of this, but I just thought I'd say it, is that you convert no one. Yeah, I mean, and you never will, because Christ is the one who converts. Grace is, you know, basically the person cooperating with Christ is converts himself. All you do is remove obstacles. And also that it's been my experience in my, you know, many years. No, but
that example is always better than argument. It's true. I mean, it's just a proven fact. Argument, because of the frailty and the, like you were saying, ego, when you batter somebody, right, or even not batter, when you,
batter somebody,
when you batter somebody and you shut them down, they're more likely to turn off and not see the way you're living and not see the true and think about what you're saying. Then they'll just turn you off and say, he's a freak, you scream at me over the telephone or whatever. And that's all.
You had 3 points. The first and the last are invalid. Bring them up in court. Much better. Can defeat them easily, but I won't do it now because I'll just embarrass you and you'll feel like
the
young, funky kid you are. But the one in the middle, you're perfectly correct. We get certain sloppiness in language when we say conversion and we try to convert people. You're absolutely correct. But I think when we have a non-precise speech, and this is not precise in the sense we're not defining terms of splitting hairs or with theological precision, we're allowed to use the word convert, meaning attempt to bring someone into the point. I did say at one point the accepted invitation. The best we can do is invite, and I'm not even sure if we can remove obstacles. We can attempt to because it's always an act of will on their part. And you're perfectly right on that, and I plead guilty to a little sloppiness of language as far as that goes. And I hope that people understood when I said convert, that no one converts anyone. It is always an act of will. You're perfectly correct, and I qualify that. That's what I meant when I said it. Your other two arguments are what's called fatuous or specious. They appear to be valid on the face, but on the cross-examination, they completely fall apart. And I'd love you to bring them up on the cross.
So you understand that everyone must be evangelized. If God created someone who has no talent whatsoever, who's autistic or whatever, they are still offers. They're not denying salvation.
Once again, sloppiness of language. And no one denies the offering of salvation by anything. I'll qualify. What I'm talking about is, you know, above 7 years old or 12 or something like that, quote, above the idiocy level of intelligence and stuff like that. And we're not talking about someone who's, you know, comatose or in an iron lung or something like that or can't talk. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the average person. And what I'm also doing is trying to make it very personal to people here, because everybody here, except for the children, fits into that category.
What Vinny is talking about then is the everyday Catholic who's living in the world.
And the people attending this activity. To make it very personal, so I said, why don't you recognize that?
I think it's a lot.
Okay.
Where are you going? How much money you need? Just so you don't hit on me.
How much paper?
23 million paper?
26.
Okay. It went up to
that.
No, that is. This is 29 already.
This is. That we have to ask that St. Lord, if we don't act, we will go to hell, if we don't do acts to bring about the kingdom of God.
Correct.
On the other hand, you spoke about original sin, which has left us concupiscence, and you defined that as meaning that we see the good, so we don't always, we are not always able to follow the good.
Yes.
And meaning that there is a kind of a brokenness, a kind of a incapacity which has resulted from original sin.
Yes.
So how do you reconcile those two things? And if you can give a practical answer.
Sure.
If I am kind of crippled because of original sin, that means I can't do that much. I can do something, but not as much as if I were not crippled.
Exactly. That's exactly the point we brought up before.
So on a daily basis, I am given so many opportunities to do all these things to bring about the kingdom. How much do I do?
Okay, very good. First of all, as you said, is how do I reconcile the two?
Yeah.
I reconcile the two by the cross, the redemption of Christ, who paid the debt of original sin and put us back essentially in our, not our preternatural state with the sense of preternatural gifts, but put us back in the state of, once we're baptized, once we're given the grace that's earned by Jesus on the cross, what we have is original sin wiped out. Now, concupiscence still exists, but we don't have to cooperate with it. Very similar analogy, if I may use
it rains and we walk outside, you may carry an umbrella, in which case you can keep the vast majority of the water off. You can bundle up in various different rubbery things and keep all the water off, or you can go out and get wet. It's your choice. The rain will still fall. I say that what you have to do is start with the basic concept that God exists, which I think most of us have not dealt with. We are functional atheists. And what you work on is this. You suspend your will and you say, God, present to me the people you want me to deal with today. And as it says in the Our Father, which we should say every day, lead us not into temptation. Okay, therefore, practical example. If you are sitting, as happened to me, on the subway with someone, and the person sits down next to you and opens the Bible and starts to read, and you see it's the King James Version, and you see the person has various different words from the Old English that she's defined, that is not an accident. She's been planned for all eternity to sit there next to you that time, and everything you say is going to be exactly what's going to hit directly in her heart if you suspend your own will. Well, how do you suspend your own will? Instead of thinking what you're going to say, you say, okay, Lord, you put it here for a reason. Now you take over, and you say, may I? And it's about as far as you get, and the rest of the words will come from God.
But is it all out of
luck?
Is it all out of
luck
because the cross has wiped away this brokenness?
Of course. That's why you put yourself in hell.
Then why do we need it? Then why do we need a Savior, and why do we need forgiveness? We can do it all by ourselves. Like
no, I'm sorry. It's all up to us in the sense of, as I said before, and I'll try to be more precise if I'm misleading you. It's all up to us in the sense that the grace of God is always present. Okay. One of the problems with Pelagianism, I think, really was a matter of, he just defined it slightly different, he never got in trouble. He says, man is the type of creature who can do good on his own. Well, he can't. If he had just said, man is the creature who has always enough grace around so that if he cooperates with, he can always do the good act, which is, not definitionally, but in a functional sense, the exact same thing. Because it means we can always do good. Of course we can. Why? Because there is always enough grace to help us to do that supernatural thing which is good. Now, it is a distinction that you understand it comes from God, and it's like air. There's always air around, there's always the grace of God around, there's always enough actual grace, sanctifying grace, sacramental grace for us to do good. Therefore, it is always up to us to simply make the act of will to say, I'm cooperating with it this time. And as I can't flip it off because that's one of my arguments, but to put it as briefly as possible, once you premise the concept that God is in charge, and once you suspend your own will, what you find is you cannot fail. The opportunities will always be there. You cannot fail unless you resist the grace of God. That's why I objected to you.
Are you perfectly cooperating with God? You're sitting on the subway. The person is sitting next to you. You're right. For all eternity.
Yes.
Moments right. You've been placed here. If you perfectly cooperate with God,
yes.
you will possibly change their bent in life.
Sure.
And maybe at least you'll present them with a situation where they can make this choice.
Yes.
Validly. But is it possible that you won't perfectly cooperate with God's grace, and therefore you will do a less than adequate job? That's a possibility.
Sure, absolutely.
And so, in other words, it's not this great leap. I cooperate. I'm supposed to be here. I'll talk to this person. Therefore, if they don't accept what I say, in the way I say it, they have chosen the evil thing. Possibly you didn't cooperate enough with God.
Possibly I
they haven't been put to the test.
Of course. But the only point I'm trying to make here is we judge by God's standard, it's not human. The human standard, the God standard is, what was your intention? What did you do? Did you work? The human standard is, did I see this person whip out a rosary or buy one? We can't tell what goes on internally. Okay, and that's the whole point. I would say I'd be very happy if I see this person at the judgment seat get into heaven. Then they don't care. Okay? Now if she goes to hell, then I just want to say, did I fail? Okay, and I'm sure I'll know when I'm in purgatory and those things are being checked off. But I'll get over here. But go ahead.
This ends the tape. If you wish to contact us, write us, or obtain additional copies of this tape or any of our products, please contact us at ARM55 Palen, that's P-Paul, A-L-E-N, Road, number 38, Hope Well Junction, New York, 12533. Thank you for listening. God bless.